Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, the sun is out here in Michigan. It's a glorious day, and I've spent the past couple days when I have free time prepping for a role-playing game.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the best possible way that sentence could end.
So. Yeah, we were at the pool over the weekend. It was not really warm enough to be at the pool, but my kids were just like, you know, we got to go. You know, it's summer. It's finally time. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to be cold. I'm not going to get in the water. But I did end up getting in the water. But I also brought along with me my tablet so I could continue to read the PDF of T1, The Village of Hamlet from Advanced Dungeons and Dragons by Gary Gygax. I think it was the last episode, maybe, you know, two episodes ago, we had a lengthy conversation about like, hey, what should Chris buy? You know, I had a bunch of money at Noble Knight. Noble Knight for trading in some other TTRPGs that I was never gonna run or play. So I decided after that conversation and I think chatting with you a little bit more that like, hey, you know what? I need to go down this road of like, let's go run classic AD&D, kind of early modules. Like I'm gonna run at least one of these and kind of see if it gets out of my system or if it's, if it makes me like, yeah, if I need to just run all of them or something like that. So I was looking around, chatting with you, chatting with some other people, and like, the Village of Hamlet kind of kept coming up as like, this is like a good one to run. It's sort of like, a good intro, intro to D&D, from back in the day. I decided I'm going to buy a copy of that once I get kind of all my funds situated with Noble Knight. But for the time being, I just grabbed a PDF that I've started to read and mark up. So
that's fantastic. You know, I have to go back a minute. You're talking about on a gorgeous summer day, pulling out your PDF to read T1, The Village of Hamlet. Reminds me, like, so I grew up in Southern California, like this paradise, sort of situation. And I have very vivid memories. I have a younger sister, so I would sometimes be sent to just like watch over my younger sister while she went swimming in like the neighborhood pool.
Yeah.
And I remember like sitting in a pool. It's gorgeous, impossibly gorgeous weather. There's probably like gorgeous girls my age, like milling around the pool. And I remember pulling out my copy of Middle Earth Role Playing first edition to like read by the pool. So
wonderful.
So that's the energy you're channeling right now. Decades later.
It's like, the older I get, the more I just embrace, this is just who I am. I was talking with some coworkers about this recently, it's a big conversation in the tech world about like, hey, what are you going to do when you try to get out of tech now? Just because, AI has been, not, it hasn't been very fun. Let's just say that like computers are no longer fun, so people are like, would you, want to go like buy a farm and, raise goats instead or something like that? I'm like, at my core, I'm just sort of an indoor kid who wants to be like playing computer games and prepping for TTRPGs, that sort of stuff.
So can you tell me a little bit about what was it like trying to find an answer to the question, what classic D&D adventure module should I pick up? I assume you went online and you were like Googling best AD&D modules and you talked to your friends and they all had strong opinions. I'm curious, like, so what led you to Village of Hamlet?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I was looking around, right, like, you can find like any, there's a Reddit thread that will, say like, this is the best module for every module.
Right,
Hamlet comes up quite a bit though, in those. And honestly, the thing that kind of like finally pushed me over the edge, Matt Coville, I think his name is, he is like pretty, he has a video that I watched years ago where he's just like, hey, this is a really good, really good adventure. So I was like, well, if I'm going to pick something, I might as well start here. It's one that I know the name of, seems pretty good. And this is also the lead into, is it T2, the,
Temple of Elemental Evil.
Which also sounds like a classic. And I know you've read that before too. So I'm like, well, okay, well, this is a good place to start. So if I enjoy this, we have something to go move on to, or, I can say like, cool, check that one off. And now I can, dive into something else. I've read the other one that popped up was the Sinister something of Saltmarsh.
Saltmarsh, yes.
Yeah, Saltmarsh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I've read a little bit of that and that did not quite grab me. from like the intro for some reason. But I've heard that's also excellent. I think it's one of those things where like at the table, it probably plays better than it reads maybe.
Yes. But. I've run it in its old versions and in it's been reworked for like modern editions a couple of times. And it is a classic for good reason. People love Saltmarsh because it's like kind of a Scooby-Doo fake out. It leads you to expect one thing and then it hands you the other in a fairly delightful way. But I'd 100% agree with you that delight comes from the table, not from reading the description of the module.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's like, I think if I do end up running another one, that'll probably be the next thing on the list, but we'll see. So
yeah.
So I have started reading through like the PDF. I'm marking some stuff up and there's something I want to read to you in just a little bit, but you know, so I've been going through that a little bit, mostly kind of reading about the NPCs and stuff, at this point, and NPCs in the buildings and things. And then I've started to reach out to some friends just to see like, hey, who wants to play in this thing? My goal is to try to do it in person over, you know, a couple nights, throughout the summer, or just pick a weekend where we just kind of power through it.
Of course,
on one day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of what I'm doing. But yeah, I'm trying to round up people, which is always the fun part of like, okay, cool. Like I think we've talked about this in the past. Like I firmly believe that scheduling is like a multi-step process. Like kind of number one, you got to figure out like who's going to be there, like who actually wants to be there, which can be the whole thing. And then you have the actual, like, let's pick a date to do it.
Yeah.
You usually lose someone at that second step, of course, yes. even after you've done all the first step stuff. Yeah. So I'm trying to get a handful of people together that say that they're enough, at least interested enough to be in part of the planning thread.
So I'm curious, is part of your pitch like, hey, let's play old school D&D like it was in the 80s? Is that part of the pitch?
No, the pitch has been I want to play like an old school module, like old school D&D module. I'll probably end up using the new rules. And I did promise at least one of the players that I'm not going to use a lot of rules. So
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not like, this is also, I'm not going to use this as like a, oh, I also want to run whatever, some OSR thing. It's going to be D&D in some flavor. Right. And it'll be like the style of D&D that I enjoy, which is going to be a lot less combat, a lot less combat, but although there will still be, you know, quite a bit of combat in it.
So forgive me if I pester you with a couple questions here. So
go for it.
So going into this, what feeling are you hoping or do you expect to find when you crack open an old D&D module versus like, I mean, I think in like third edition, Wizards of the Coast did an update of like T1 through T4, like the whole element of evil thing. But so like, what do you expect from an old school module? And tell me about what you found when you actually flipped it open, or it was a PDF. So you like,
So my hope when I'm opening this up, like my hope has been that I will find a lot of rough edges in it.
Okay.
Right. And like, so part of that is like, right, like modern day, you know, books are, and I'd say even like indie books too, like are just sort of, they're polished to a level that I think the older stuff wasn't. Right. And that's like, I actually want to like, so there's two things I want to read, which are just sort of like Gygax interjecting sort of like really hard, into this. So like it's from early on in the module. So I'm going to read like a couple blocks of text here.
Yeah, please do.
So the first one is sort of about like, you know, like what the DM is in this. So he says, the persons met at the inn along the road and so forth are you, for the dungeon master is all monsters, NPCs, the gods, everything. Play it to the hilt. Do it with flair and wit. Be fair both to the characters and to yourself. Be deceitful, clever, and thoroughly dishonest when acting the part of the thief. Be cunning, but just when you're taking in the role of a warden ranger. Actually think of it all as the part you are taking is that of a character you are playing and act accordingly, but temper actions with disinterest in the eventual outcome and only from the viewpoint of that particular role. Wearing 2, 3, or half a dozen or more different hats is challenging, but that is part of being an outstanding DM. Right. It's like this like paragraph like really jumped out to me. Right. Cause it's like, you know, he's kind of like doing like the intro stuff. And then like, this is like Gygax, I feel like interjecting, being like, this is how to play these games. Right. And I think like some of this has softened, over the years. Right. But like, I think it's still that core idea. Like that's what's attractive too, of like, you know, of playing, you know, playing these games and then also being, you know, kind of the DM, the GM, right? Is that like, you do have to like embody all of this, but I really, really like this idea of like, yes, embody it, but like also don't have, you know, the outcome predetermined in your head too, like being open to that, which I think is really great. And something that I've noticed in like some other like kind of D&D-ish products recently, and then also too, just like in how I run things, like there is kind of a predetermined outcome that people are sort of like looking for. And what I'm hoping is running this is it's a little bit more sandboxy than some other kind of modern stuff.
Well, my memory of T1 is that it is like a sort of apotheosis of a certain type of adventure design, where it's like, here's like 50 locations and all the NPCs that live there. I don't know what story is going to emerge from this, but like, it's this idea of like, turn your players loose in this like sandbox, and some interesting stories will inevitably arise from there, just like crossing paths or butting heads with these different like NPCs. Is that the sense you get from reading through it?
Yeah. In fact, like, yeah, I guess he even like talks about this, like just after that paragraph, he talks a little bit like about how this is sort of it, like there was a campaign that sort of like happened that this is taken from almost. Right. And the thought is that like, oh, hey, you know, like you are going to step in with your players and kind of make your own version of that in this place too. Like, so the other thing that I highlighted in here, he mentions that this kind of came out of a different campaign. You have a chance to make your own history. And then he says, well, I'm strongly tempted to relate the events of that campaign we played. I believe that it is inappropriate to the module, perhaps sometime in an article in The Dragon. Right. So he's even saying like, look, like we played this, it was super fun. I'm not going to tell you what happened because we want you to kind of experience your own version of it. Yeah. So I definitely feel that. Right. And even just with how it's structured, at least at the beginning, it's just like, I mean, it's just bullet pointed NPCs to start with, right? Of just like, here's who lives in this building, you know, here's their whole vibe, like here's their, you know, like here's like, you know, their stat blocks and all that. But then also, and I think, you know, I was remarking to you, like it's also like followed up with like, and here's where they stash all their, you know, their good treasure and their loot.
Yeah.
Too. Right. I mean, like I think there's definitely a version of the village of Hamlet where you come in and you kill everybody in the town and, you know, take all their stuff. Right. And I think like it's sort of like leading in that direction, but also kind of like, yeah, trying to have this sense of like, oh, there's an economy and like people have this stuff and like everybody's sort of doing their own thing. They're not just sitting there waiting in their house for you to show up.
Are you going to be able, like, do you feel comfortable going into this game without like an intended or desired course you'd like your players to take? Or reading through it, is the shape of like a storyline taking shape in your mind?
I don't have a storyline quite yet, but I think I do want to have a couple of pretty solid options for them. Right. Because otherwise, like we could spend the whole campaign just like, you know, doing town stuff, right? Like, you know, going around and like meeting people. But I think I want to make sure that there's a couple of like, especially that first session, there's like, you know, two or three hooks that they could follow, you know, follow pretty easily, right? And there's obviously like, you know, there's the Temple of Elemental Evil, right, hanging out there, right? So there are some things where it's like, well, yes, of course you probably want to go do this thing. You know, there's even like, I mean, I think the Viscount is the one sending you out there, right? Like, so there is a hook right there. I mean, I think there's a lot of other like kind of built-in like, yeah, hooks just based on sort of what NPCs are interested in, right? And like, I even like in the map itself, I started looking at that being like, oh, like, you know, if I wanted to, I could throw, you know, a cave in here or there that they could go explore as well, right? Like the map is, you know, it's a map of a nice like kind of, you know, tight town near a river and all that, right? So like, there's definitely some options there. But yeah, so I want to have a couple things that they can follow up on, but I really do want to try to avoid having like a, you know, the through line here is you know, show up to town, you go to the temple, you defeat whatever's happening in the temple, and then like your heroes, right? Like I would like to leave it open. I don't want to leave it open for like an evil campaign where they're like, oh great, like we're going to join the temple of elemental evil,
right?
For sure. You know, take over the town, right? But like I want to have some different options for like, you know, how do you be like, how are you going to be a hero in this situation?
Yeah. Have you found is the way that T1 is written in that old school way. Is that helpful to you or not? Like, compare it to reading like a polished 5e module, and like a good one. I'm not bashing on 5e. Like, what, and if it's helpful to you, what does it do that like maybe a modern take on this would not do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I think like I've got some like just general layout issues with it, right? Like, I think, you know, we know more about how to lay out books than we used
sure.
to. Right. So there's that side of it. Right. Like,
and you're talking as like a physical product.
Yeah. Like, as a physical product, at least in the scan that I have of the PDF, right? It's just like, you know, there's no margins, you know, there's no like real colors, like differentiating stuff, you know, fonts are sort of like, right. There's just some stuff there where it's like, you know, everything's a little too tight. You know, there isn't, you know, a lot of space given. Stuff doesn't really have a super good visual hierarchy. Like, there's some, but there could be more, right? Like, so there's lots of like little things like that. What I do, it made me laugh. Like, it's the tone of some of the NPC descriptions sort of vary wildly to the point where you can kind of tell like, oh, he wrote this one day and then you like stopped and then picked it up the next day or the next week when he was in kind of a different mood.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's like, there isn't like a consistency to the editing on it too, but like, which I find kind of charming as well. Yeah. So all that to say, like, I think, you know, there's probably a way to structure this differently. But again, like, I just, there's something about the roughness of it that I really appreciate, that I want to make sure, that I want to like experience and sort of at the table of like kind of fighting with it a little bit. And it, I like it to be a little bit more challenging to kind of get my hands around. Cause I think that also leads to at least the GM sort of making more interesting decisions about like how you're going to interact with the text.
Yeah. I think in past episodes, I've gone on about my personal belief that like, games that aren't 100% together are like in some ways a good thing, not a bad thing, because like with role playing very specifically, you've got to make this thing your own, right?
Yeah.
And so there's like a certain virtue to like being upfront with that. Like, and one way of being upfront with that is like, here's some stuff you can work with. I don't really have a plan for how you're going to use this. So like, you have to wrangle with it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make it your own.
Yeah.
I think I sometimes feel, and I, you know, I own plenty of like modern, you know, modern published adventures. And I often feel like it's too easy to like kind of follow along with what this wants me to do without pausing and being like, here's this like mess of encounters and NPCs and locations. Like, what do I want to get out of this personally at my game table? And then like, I'm not saying it's a virtue that it's like clunky and poorly laid out and maybe incomplete. And like I don't remember if T1 is like this, but a lot of basic and first edition D&D adventures, I remember from when I was a kid, you know, a lot of it is like, 2/3 of this like dungeon map is not keyed. Like, there is just blank rooms, right? Like, so this idea was like, take what you like and fill in the rest of this as you see fit. And that's like, if you pick that up now, it's kind of like maddening. Like, why did I pay this money for this adventure? That's like 2/3 of it is just like instructions to fill it myself. But I also kind of miss that sort of bluntness about the activity you're engaging in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do wonder, and this is where, you know, if I was more of a historian, I'm sure there's people have written about this, like how much of this was driven by the intentionality by the early authors of like, oh, it's neat to kind of leave these gaps and these spaces in the map versus like, they just didn't get around to it. Right. Like you know, like how much of that was a very intentional choice, a game design choice.
Yeah. There's something I've often wondered about. And I again, just as like a disclaimer here, I'm not one that like worships like old D&D is like the only true way that you could play, that you could role play. But there is a sense with a lot of old D&D products that you are getting the author's attempt to take something they actually played at the table and make it available to other people, versus like setting down with the intent of like, I want to write a cool adventure that anyone can enjoy. Like,
yeah,
there's something, and I do think from Gygax, something you get like in both good and bad ways from his stuff is like this sense that like he ran this at the table and he's trying to like, he's trying to kind of genericize it enough that you can experience the fun that he had at the table with it. And there is a sense that like it that's like a very, very hard thing to do. And I don't know if Gygax can always pull it off, or anyone can always pull it off. This sense of like, we did this thing that was like really unique to our table and what we wanted out of our game nights and what their PCs were and what their PC goals were. Like, how can I take that experience and share it with you, you know, the paying customer, so you can have your own version of this? And there's like that tension that comes out in those quotes that you just read. Like, I could tell you how this worked at my game table, but I probably had better not, because you need to do the work of figuring out how it's going to work at your game table, yes. Right?
Yeah. 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 There's a... like when I read this module, I have a very strong sense of the sort of person that person Gygax was, right? For good and well. Like, I think based on some of this stuff, like, we would not have gotten along. Like, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, oh, just sure. Like, yeah, like he just has a very particular kind of personality. Right. But like, I also just really appreciate that, because so much of that is softened in more modern books. And like, probably appropriately, honestly, like, you know, again, yeah. Like, I'm not gonna really debate the merits of it, but like, there is like this authorial intent that is definitely there. And I agree with you, like, this feels like there are definitely things in here that I've run across already where I'm like, oh, this is in here because a player was really interested in making sure that they knew this, right? Like, there's some notes on the NPCs, a few of the NPCs of like, this person will not join your party, right? Like, for anything, right? Like, they are firmly an NPC, right? They're not going to go on an adventure, you know. And other ones are like, yeah, they'll come with you, but they're going to demand half the treasure, that sort of stuff. Yeah. And then I posted a screenshot of this in a Discord we're in about like, there's an inn, you know, where you go, in the town in Hamlet, right? And like, there's a whole price list and menu for all the different kind of like the types of meals and stuff you can get. And like, it's just like this exhaustive amount of information that's not applied to like anything else in this so far necessarily. But it's like, I mean, you have your choice. Like, if you're going to order, you know, wine, there's table wine, there's Kiosh golden pints, you know, there's Erst wine, right? There's this like huge list of like different options there. And like, that very much feels like this was important to our table when we ran it. Like,
can't you just feel when you read that? Can't you just envision like this game table? They're like, what kinds of wine? Like, they just got really into, like, they were having a great time and they got really into the menu at this tavern, right? Like,
yeah, you can definitely see like what's important. Like, I think, like I mentioned, right, it's like there's so much space devoted to like how much, you know, treasure and loot and coins and stuff like that. There's space devoted to what you're eating. There's space devoted to like, you know, what you can buy with you, along with like kind of these like calculations for like how much more expensive it is here or how much cheaper, you know, based on stuff, right? Like, there's like, you get the sense that like, you know, the stuff of like eating and commerce were like super important to Gygax when he's writing this, right? And like, that's often stuff that, I mean, like, I don't know, like, I don't know if I've run a game where, you know, they showed up to, you know, an inn or a restaurant, it's like, well, here's your menu, what are you gonna eat? It's like, well, I don't know. It's just sort of like, we just eat. Like, we eat. Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's not a big deal if I'm choosing between plain supper or elaborate supper. Right. It's like, yeah, that's not like interesting to a lot of tables, but clearly it's very interesting to the sorts of games and the tables that he was running.
Are there things in the games of D&D-ish games that you run that occupy like a big chunk of time at the actual game table that you don't ever see reflected in like published adventures?
I wouldn't say so. Yeah. I mean, I think like, you know, the game, the mechanics support sort of the game you end up playing, right? So it's like,
yeah,
I think about like the stuff that takes a long time that I don't necessarily like love as a GM, but also understand is important to the players. Like, you know, like shopping is a good one of like kind of, you know, like that's a fun optimization puzzle for the group and a little bit less so for the GM. It's true, but like, I just need to know like what you decided on.
Yeah.
But like, it's a really fun thing for them to think about. And I think of the same thing, like loot and money and stuff like that. Same thing. It's like on the GM side, I don't know how interesting that is. Like, right. Like I'm not an economist, right? I'm not going to track the macroeconomic climate of whatever system that I'm running in. But, you know, for the players, like, it is exciting. Like, oh, we found another, you know, another cache of jewels, right? So, like, let's add that to our list, our growing list of loot that we're getting.
You know, so a number of years ago, I'm gonna scrub the names out of this to keep it kind of generic.
Yeah.
There's a prominent D&D blogger who ran a campaign that he blogged constant updates about basically a D&D or a D&D-esque game. It was a custom thing. He built it, this huge, like, awesome mega dungeon type of world. And when it was so popular that he ran a Kickstarter to like publish it for other people to experience. And it did end up coming out, but it was a really lengthy, painful process that involved kind of him having a kind of breaking down partway through, unable to produce it. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons I'm trying to keep this really generic, but I remember at the time thinking, like, it's a different thing to like create something for your players at the table and your friends and what they care about. That's a different. Making a great experience for your players is different than making a great experience for everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I said, that's a thing. I feel a lot from Guy Gax, both his good stuff and his less good stuff. Like, I feel like sometimes you can feel this tension between like, this was really, really fun for me and my friends to play.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how to make this something that you'll have, that you can like pick up and run. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like my friends, you know, at my table spent like an entire evening haggling with the barmaid over the menu in this tavern.
Yeah.
Your friends maybe don't care about that at all. And they all have this whole different other set of questions that they want to pursue and leads they want to follow. Do I need to like try and guess what those are going to be? Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like an interesting thing that I don't know you get in other forms of art where you're creating something for mass consumption, because like just the personalization of any RPG experience just makes it a little more difficult to like share with other people even people within your same hobby that love the same things you do.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that's often why we've somewhat shied away from on this podcast doing like blow by blows of like the actual like events within a campaign, right? Like it's like, yeah, we can talk about stuff sort of at a high level, but like the minutiae of like what happened in your campaign last night, it's not the same thing as like, I don't know, let me tell you about my dream I had. You know, it's not the same level of like, I don't have the context for why this was interesting to you, but like, it's somewhat similar, right? Like, it's magical at the table. You know, magical at the table. I think it's fun to hear, you know, like what people are excited about and stuff like that, but it's not going to be like unless I have the same experience or like, you know, I also ran the thing like that. It's like, it loses some impact in the
recall. Yeah. Well, it's like, I mean, it's why I can appreciate a lot of actual plays, you know, and some of them are really well produced, but I just really struggle with them because I always feel like I'm watching other people like enjoying a good group in joke.
Yeah.
Like I totally believe that would be an absolute blast to be a participant, but like as an outsider, it's not my joke. It's not my, you know, I can't feel the vibes the way you do, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we need to wrap up, but yeah, I will continue to keep you updated with how this goes. Yeah, my hope is to, you know, finish reading this, you know, get the actual hard copy of it, and then start playing in early summer if we can. So
yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
we'll I gotta say, I believe it is in T1, but it's possible it's in the Temple of Ultimate Evil. Is there a moat house in T1?
Yes.
Like, is that like kind of a side mini dungeon they can go to?
I think that's because, like, sort of the main one.
Okay. I've used that moat house. It's been quite a while now, but I've run that moat house a ton of times because it works. It's like a really great, like, tackle it in one evening dungeon.
Okay.
With some like fairly cool encounters. And I think, as I was telling you off the air, I think there's an NPC in there. I think it's in T1 again, maybe like Lareth the Beautiful or something like that. Okay. Who was a real love to hate him, like recurring villain in one of my early campaigns. It worked really well. So
yeah,
there's a lot of good stuff to be mined in T1, I think.
And okay.
I'm excited to hear if you latch on to any of the things that I did. So
that's good. Yeah. I might, I don't know. I'll ask you this off the air, but I get your answer. I'm wondering if I should also just read T2 just so I'd sort of have it in the back of my head.
So like running. For what it's worth, I mean, there's a whole thing about T2. It took a really long time for Tentful of Elemental Evil to come out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were kind of disappointed by the end result. It's considered like kind of a classic now in retrospect. At the time though, a lot of people were like, what I had in my head was cooler than what was produced. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't say that to judge the module exactly, but there's a lot of goodness in T2 as well. But I think there also is a reason that people say Village of Hamlet and not Temple of Elemental Evil when like you ask them what's a good, like, you know what I mean?
So
we can talk about that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Okay. Well, we should wrap it up. The last thing that I just wanted to mention about this is Gygax cares a lot more about castles than I do. so many very specific like words, like vocabulary around like what the, you know, like what, I don't know. Like there's one, I need to look this up. Mashacolated about the upper battlements. The upper battlements are mashacolated and the Merlons pierce for archery as well, right? Like people who know what those words are just like, how could you not know what those
and people that know what they are probably learned them from D&D, to be totally frank with you. Gygax's vocabulary is legendary. I mean, it's a very specific type of vocabulary.
But
if you know it, you know it. So
yeah it's good. Cool. All right, well, that does it for us. Yeah, thanks for letting me talk about this, but yeah, we'll continue to follow up with it as we go here. But So that does it for us. We've been Roll for Topic. You can check out Andy if you want more Andy in your life on Zombie Strains with John Corey. They just published a episode, right? Was it your wrap up of the 40s and 50s or the 50s and 60s?
50s and 60s. Yep. Nice. We made it through the 50s and 60s. That was sort of our season two of our podcast.
Nice.
And so we recently published a sort of what did we learn wrap up episode about it.
That's great. Yeah, that's really good. And then I know the density of zombie movies starts to pick up quite a bit.
Yes. Here, so,
yeah. But yeah, go check that out. It's really great. So that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.